You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to tonight's live broadcast of The Political Cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards. Saturday evening, January the 28th, and what a month it's been to kick things off here in 2023, along with Keith Alexander. Here we go. News this week, and we'll tell you what's coming up on the program tonight after we tell you that Pat Buchanan retired his pen. Now, that didn't come as too much of a shock to anybody who follows Pat. He hadn't written a column since, I believe, October. But he made it official this week, retiring a nearly 50-year column, it seemed. In any event, his voice will always be missed. And
I hope he's not having any health issues.
And hearing the news about him retiring officially, it, of course, made me walk down memory lane. You know what I was doing 23 years ago this very week, Keith? I bet you can guess.
Must have been working in a Buchanan campaign.
Well, that's exactly right. You've all heard the story about how I first met Pat. I first met Pat 23 years ago yesterday at the Hermitage. You've heard me tell that story. Very cold day in Nashville, and bumped into him at an event that wasn't even supposed to be publicized. I was the only one there. Ended up taking the tour with him for about 3 hours, and anyway, got enlisted in the campaign. A story you haven't heard is that 2 weeks later, on February the 10th, I was in Lexington, Kentucky with Pat. And back in those days, they didn't have CD players in cars yet. It wasn't common anyway. You still had cassette decks, and you could have this adapter where you could put a CD in, the Walkman with this little contraption that would play it through your cassette deck. But I didn't do that too often. I knew basically every oldies station, every 50s and 60s station in a 500-mile radius of Memphis. So if I was in Nashville, I knew the oldies station. I was up in Lexington, I found the oldies station. And a guy named Randy was the Buchanan campaign chairman in Tennessee. So there was one guy in each state that was sort of the liaison between the Buchanan campaign itself and the workers in that particular state. And Randy was a great guy. I mean, we really got to know each other well throughout the course of the year 2000. And after I got signed on, he said, "We got an event in Lexington. We need you to go up there and help with." So I was up in Lexington on February the 10th of 2000. And I was running late finding the hotel. It was dark, and it was raining. And so help me God, I was listening to the oldies station trying to find this hotel where the event was at. I was like, I'm going to blow it. This is like my first assignment. I'm going to blow it. I'm going to miss it. I can't find it. You didn't have GPS on your phone back then. And that's Kentucky rain came on the radio.
Now, was this Lexington, Kentucky where it was?
Lexington, Kentucky. No, Lexington, Kentucky. And so the Kentucky rain came on while I was searching for the place, and it was cold and sleeting, and I'll never forget. I always liked that song. I said, "You got to be kidding me." But in any event,
it was the first one released by the Elvis Returns to Memphis album done by Chips Moman at American Studios in Memphis. Chips Moman was just a genius. He didn't get enough credit. He basically, if anyone needed a boost in their career, needed a hit, he provided it for them. Everybody, even people like Ringo Starr, got it from him. So
it's a great song. It's a really
Neil Diamond basically owes his more than half of his catalog to Chips Moman.
It's one of my favorite Elvis songs. It's one that gets overlooked. It's not one that you really think about when you think about all the hits he had, but it's a beautiful song. Any event, just thinking back on those years, I'll tell you a couple of stories real quick since I'm in a storytelling mood, and then I'll tell you what we got coming up tonight. So anyway, I found the hotel. We had a great event that night in Lexington at the hotel, and so that was my second time to be with Buchanan in a 2-week period. And then the rest was history that year. And so worked with Randy They tapped me to be the district captain for the 7th Congressional District. And one of my first jobs was I needed to recruit delegates and district captains for the 8th and 9th Congressional District. Now, the 8th is in northwestern Tennessee, and the 9th is in the city of Memphis, and the 7th kind of stretch from the eastern suburbs of Memphis up to Nashville. And so I found two guys that I thought would be good to be the district captains in 8 and 9. And if you were a district captain, you had the first right to be the delegate at the Reform Party convention where Pat accepted the nomination in Long Beach, California. I was out there for that. They also asked me to be the treasurer of the campaign in Tennessee, which I accepted. So I'm doing all of this at 20 years old. And as I got more and more responsibilities, and I can remember all of this stuff, you had to run to be in compliance with Reform Party bylaws, you had to post in the local paper that you were having a meeting, and then anybody who came to this officially posted meeting, you know, could vote in the state party convention. And we needed our slate in there to make sure that Buchanan was the nominee and so on and so forth. And I remember doing all, I went through, after Pat said he was retiring, I went through my scrapbook from that year. And there's stuff even I forgot, pictures you've never seen, Keith. I got a lot of pictures that year from all these different campaign stops. And all these ads that I was putting in the newspapers at the time, anything they asked me to do, anything the campaign asked me to do, I did it, and I mean to a T. And then they said, well, we need you to help be one of the guys that gets Pat on the ballot. I went out, I got my list. We had to get X number of signatures. I remember going over to my seventh grade math teacher. I drove over to her house. I said, hey, Miss Walker, can you sign this petition to get Pat Buchanan on the ballot? We did all of that stuff. We were working at gun shows. We were working in front of grocery stores to get him on the ballot. Whether it was getting him on the ballot, being the treasurer of the campaign in Tennessee, a district captain, a delegate, I did it all. And by the end of the campaign, by the fall of that year, you know, I'd kind of proven myself a little bit, right? And so they gave me more responsibility. They said, we want to bring the candidate to your house. Well, I don't have a house yet. I'm 20 years old, but my parents have a house. And okay, well, we'll do that. How about can you get us in a school? I got them in at Lausanne Collegiate School, one of the elite prep academies. Did it all. And then by the end of it all in October, from humble beginnings in January and February of 23 years ago, all the way to October, I did my first TV appearance as a surrogate for the campaign, representing the campaign. And it really helped sharpen my skills.
What year was that?
That was obviously 2000. That was when he ran for president. Yeah, 23 years ago, the year 2000, all in the year 2000. And really gave me my start. It was one of the best years of my life. So, I mean, for all of the reasons people laud Pat Buchanan and the fact that his platform is now the de facto platform of the Republican base, and, you know, the ideas made it even if he didn't, really just personally one of the very best years of my life. And if it wasn't for that year, my parents were a part of that. My grandmother was a part of that. My grandmother's sister, we went to campaign events. I took two girls with me to this event. It was my grandmother and her sister. everybody, hey, Mrs. McGregor, how you doing tonight? But they gave me a chance to prove myself. They gave me a chance to be a leader, and they gave me a chance to prove my worth. And if it wasn't for that year, which, again, was one of the best of my life, there would be no political cesspool. None of it would have ever happened. So,
well, you know, what a seminal influence Pat Buchanan was. I know he was the reason I got involved, you got involved, so many of us did.
Well, he was a gateway for a lot of people. He retired his pin. Paul Craig Roberts has not. Paul Craig Roberts is going to be our guest coming up next. He's standing by. Stay tuned. Former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, former Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal, Paul Craig.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MericaFirst.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah, a message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is very much our honor to bring back to the program once again, but for the first time in at least a couple of years, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury under Ronald Reagan and former associate editor and columnist at the Wall Street Journal. In addition to being a professor of economics at no less than six American universities, he's back tonight to talk about the escalating situation between the United States and Russia. But first, let's say hello. Dr. Roberts, it's great to have you back. Very much a privilege and our honor.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, I think I could we could do a whole hour on each leg of your career. I mean, talk about having experience in each of the institutions of power, working in government, not in the legislative basement, but under Ronald Reagan, working not just at, as a university professor, but at places like Stanford and Georgetown and Tulane, and then not just being a journalist, but the Wall Street Journal. So a very prestigious background you have. But tonight, I am a regular reader at your website, paulcraigroberts.com, and you have written, paulcraigroberts.org, I'm there right now here in the studio. You have written extensively about the situation involving Russia and the Ukraine, and I would love for you to share your takes with us about that. Obviously, the escalation this week where it appears the Biden administration is sending over a contingent of tanks. So take it any way you want to, Dr. Roberts.
Well, thank you, James. there are two causes of this conflict, or the potential escalation of the conflict in Ukraine into a nuclear war that would threaten life on the planet. One of them is the American neoconservative agenda of American hegemony. The neoconservatives were convinced by the collapse of the Soviet Union that there was no barrier to the United States being able to exercise its will over the world. That it was that the United States consisted of exceptional people, indispensable, and had the right to hegemony over the world. And the principal agenda of American foreign policy, as described by the neoconservatives, they call it the Wolfowitz Doctrine, is that the principal goal of American foreign policy is to prevent the rise of any country that could limit American unilateralism. That was spelled out in the early 1990s and has been the main instrument of American foreign policy now for three decades. Well, Russia and China, of course, have risen, and they are in the way of American unilateralism because they have their own interests and they're too powerful, and so they are targets for being moved away, out of the way. In my opinion, this is a very unrealistic agenda by the American neoconservatives, who now control American foreign policy and have since the final years of the Clinton administration. So then, one cause of the trouble is this agenda of Washington. The other cause is, I think, in the Kremlin, in Putin. Putin has been demonized. He's the new Hitler. He's terrible and all of this. But the fact of the matter is he's really just a liberal. He's a peacemaker. He doesn't want war. He wants to concentrate on improving life for Russians. But he is being forced into roles he doesn't want by this American agenda of hegemony, because Putin is not willing to accept American hegemony over Russia. I mean, it's impossible for him. So he is sort of forced to take roles he doesn't want. For example, the time for Putin to have interfered in Ukraine was now 9 years ago, in 2014, when the United States government overthrew the government of Ukraine and imposed an anti-Russian puppet. Well, that's when the Russian army should have occupied Kiev and put the whole thing down. But he didn't do it, because that would be force, and it would be fight, it would be, or there might be. He also, if he was going to come to the rescue of the Russians in the eastern part of Ukraine, you see, most people don't know that not only was Ukraine part of Russia for 300 or 400 years, but that the eastern part of Ukraine was originally part of the Russian province itself and was transferred into the Ukraine province of the Soviet Union by Soviet commissars for various political and administrative reasons, so that the people in Donbass are Russians. And when the United States overthrew the Ukrainian government, the neo-Nazi militias in Ukraine started oppressing these Russian residents. They were being killed, slaughtered, attacked, and eventually Ukrainian forces joined and they were shelled. And this area of Donbass then spun off two republics declaring their independence. And they asked Russia to accept them back into Russia, as it had done Crimea, also historically a part of Russia that had been transferred into the Ukrainian province of the Soviet Union. Well, Putin rejected their application and left them for 8 years subject to shelling, bombardments, massacres. And finally, at the end of 2021, beginning of 2022, when the Russians made an all-out effort with the United States and NATO to arrive at a mutual security agreement. And Putin was given a very rude cold shoulder by Biden and Blinken, the American Secretary of State, and by NATO. it finally dawned on him that there was no possibility of any kind of accommodation of Russian concerns with the West. And it also came to his belated attention that the 8 years that he had been struggling to get the West to abide by the Minsk Agreement, which was an agreement to keep Donbass as part of Ukraine, but to give it enough autonomy that it would have its own police force so it couldn't be persecuted by the Ukrainians. Recently, Merkel, the former chancellor of Germany, said, we just tricked him. We deceived him. We pretended we were going to honor Donbass while we built up the Ukrainian army. Well, this is a pretty devastating statement because it shows that Putin really didn't know what was going on. He didn't realize he was being deceived for 8 years. Now, that's really something that you could be deceived for 8 years and not catch on. But February.
Hold on right there, sir. If you don't mind, we got to take a hard break here at the bottom of the hour. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Paul Craig Roberts. PaulCraigRoberts.org, a former Assistant Secretary of the United States Treasury, former Associate Editor of the Wall Street Journal, and columnist there, and so much more. PaulCraigRoberts.org. He'll be back with us right after this break. We're going to get Alexander, my co-host, into the mix as we talk about Russia, Ukraine.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Jerry Barmash. The Memphis Police Department is deactivating its Scorpion unit. It comes in the wake of the Tyree Nichols beating. Memphis PD posting a statement on Twitter saying that in the process of listening to the Nichols family and community leaders, it was in the best interest of all to permanently deactivate the unit. The five officers fired and charged in connection with the death of the 29-year-old Nichols were a part of the unit. Donald Trump is hitting the campaign trail. The former president spoke to Republicans in the Granite State on Saturday.
I stand before you today and make this solemn pledge. When I'm back in the White House, I will ensure that New Hampshire remains the home of the first-in-nation Republican primary for many, many years to come.
Trump also had an event at another early voting state in South Carolina. LAPD detectives are looking into a Saturday morning deadly shooting in a suburb of Los Angeles. Police responded to an assault with a deadly weapon call just after 2:30 in the morning in a neighborhood near Beverly Hills. Officers found three people dead at the scene. This weekend marks 37 years since Space Shuttle Challenger exploded moments after liftoff, and the images are still fresh for many.
As a nation, we were watching with great anticipation and excitement as the first teacher in space was about to lift off. Several delays had pushed back the Challenger launch, but on this January morning, it was a go. And then, as we watched live on television...
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction. We have no downlink. We have a report from the flight dynamics officer that the vehicle has exploded. Flight director confirms that. We are looking at checking with the recovery forces to see what can be done at this point.
All seven astronauts, including teacher Krista McAuliffe, were killed in the disaster. I'm John Schaefer.
This is USA News.
The inventor and CEO of MyPillow is always looking for ways to solve everyday problems. Have you ever picked up a towel set because it felt really soft in the store, but then when you go to use it, it's not very absorbent? It's basically a towel that's leaving you out to dry. That's why MyPillow has developed the MyPillow towels. Towels that work. I know, it's mind-blowing. Towels that actually dry you. The six-piece towel set includes two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. They come in a variety of colors, and right now, now you can receive a six-piece set for only $39.98 with promo code USA. Go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the Radio Listener Special. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. To receive this amazing offer on the six-piece set of MyPillow towels, just go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special, and enter promo code USA, or call 800-951-8175. That's MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
You know, if you think about it, Craig Roberts is a lot like the Beatles. The Beatles said they could sing the phone book and people would buy it. I would listen to Craig talk about anything and be riveted, but talking about an issue as important as this is to all of us is certainly something I'm excited to have someone with his renown on to discuss. And again, you can follow his articles. He is a prolific writer at paulcraigroberts.org. We're talking with him now about Russia-Ukraine. I want to bring my co-host Keith Alexander in on this as we continue on. But, you know, it doesn't – the American people are completely, you couldn't exaggerate the level of ignorance. You see man on the street interviews, they can't. The average American can't even tell you the belligerence in the war between the states, what they call the Civil War. They can't even tell you who fought in it. So to ask that they have an understanding of geopolitical concerns in this part of the world is to ask too much. But any of us who do know anything about it knows that this history of the Ukraine, this was always Russian land, the land of the Rus. Their original founding city was Kiev, you know, back in that area. And for centuries, this was part of Russia, up until, of course, the fall of the Soviet Union. And then, you know, you were talking, Craig, about the fact that in 2014, when they had this color revolution to put in the puppet Zelensky, they should have taken decisive action then. But short of that, they should have certainly taken decisive action at the onset of hostilities about a year ago to the day now. We'll get into that again in just a moment. But first, Keith, you got a quick question for the renowned Craig Roberts.
Right. Mr. Roberts, what is going on here? Who is this, some effort to advance a one-world government scheme that America is part of? Does Israel have any part in this? What is going on? Because I think Putin was not the only person surprised by all this. I think most Americans were. Had no idea that we were really willing to go to the mat over who ruled in Kiev.
Well, it's a scheme of the Jewish neoconservatives who have the doctrine of American hegemony. And they have been running United States foreign policy since the last couple of years of the Clinton regime. They ran it during George W. Bush. I mean, Cheney was one of them. They ran it. they drove Trump out of office. And they ran it with Obama, and they're running it with Biden. And it's generally always the same people. For example, the woman the Jewish woman, neoconservative, who organized the overthrow of the Ukrainian regime, she's now the Undersecretary of State.
Is that Newman or Numa? What?
I can't think of her name right now. Yeah, but
interchangeable parts, Keith.
Yeah, but I think she's got a name.
But look, I'm sorry. This explanation I was giving it was taking so long, but it,
no, go
the
ahead.
Question
no, no, please.
Asked,
take your time. Go ahead.
The question you ask can't be answered in a soundbite, and I'm almost through with it. I was showing that with the American side, it's this doctrine of American hegemony, which means that other countries can't represent their own interests. They have to represent our interests. And this is nothing that appeals to Russia or China. And so they're targets, and as you see, for whatever administration, whether it's Trump or whoever. So now, from the Russian standpoint, I'm telling you that Putin is not a warmonger. He doesn't want war. He's tried to avoid it. He was willing to leave the Russian area of Donbas, which he's now conquered, in Ukraine, as long as they could have some autonomy and not continue to be persecuted by the Ukrainians. But he's been forced over, you know, by the United States to eventually use some force. So we speak of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, but no such invasion has occurred. The Russian forces only entered Donbas, which are two independent republics who declared their independence from Ukraine. They didn't
great
invade
point.
Ukraine. Yeah.
That's a great point.
Trump made some point about that too early on.
Yeah. And so the difficulty was in Putin's mind. I don't know why he thought that that Washington would let him have a limited operation. The minute this started, he should have known it was going to go to a wider war. And he made a fundamental strategic blunder by trying to make it limited. What was called for was the immediate knockout of Ukraine. The Russians could have done it in 5 or 6 days. And that would have been over with before the United States and NATO could have gotten involved. Instead, by trying to make it limited, he gave the United States and NATO now 1 year to get more and more and more involved. And now we're on the level where we're talking about giving Ukrainians missiles that can hit Moscow. Well, it's just as much Putin's fault for not realizing the nature of the situation he was in as it is the fault of the Washington neoconservatives trying to impose American hegemony on a superpower. So it is this conflict that's leading to nuclear war, because Putin's lack of strong response to provocation after provocation. Look, we tried to blow up the Crimea Bridge. We blew up the Russian pipelines, the Nord Stream. We've now sent, we're going to send Abrams tanks. The tanks don't matter. They'll get blown up very quickly. But the point is, the Abrams tanks use depleted uranium as ammunition. Russia regards this as a dirty bomb. They regard this as the use of nuclear weapons. We're doing it anyhow.
Have we waited
it's
too
these
long?
These provocations. Look, you have to understand, you keep doing provocations. You don't get a strong response. The provocations get more and more reckless. And then all of a sudden, the person you're antagonizing has to strike out. That's how you get nuclear war. And that is exactly what is unfolding at the present time.
Has Putin waited too long? Can he still win this war with a decisive stroke or not?
He can win it whatever way he wants. There's no possibility whatsoever of Ukraine winning the war, or of NATO. If the entire NATO was there, there's no possibility. Nobody can possibly defeat Russia on their home territory. It's not conceivable. The United States can't do it. But the trouble is, by doing it slow, village by village, slogging it out in order to minimize the destruction of Ukraine, he drags this out for so long that the Washington's provocations multiply and they get worse and worse and worse. And it's the worsening of the provocations. They'll reach a point that Putin can't overlook them. And that's when hell breaks loose. And if you're talking about, look, people don't understand this. The war that's been going on in Donbass, is there's practically no Russian army there. The war is carried on by the militias of the two Donbass republics and a private military group known as the Wagner Group. It's like an auxiliary of the Russian army. It's not the Russian army. It's a private military group. It's highly effective. They're very effective. So this is who's been fighting the war. And when they had to pull back because they had such advances, they didn't have the manpower for the lines. When they pulled back to consolidate, we said, oh, Ukraine's winning, Russian defeats. There's no such thing. But now, apparently, Putin has called up the Russian army, and there's 500,000 of them now on the border, 2,000 tanks, endless numbers of rockets and missiles. If
all right, that's what we're going to pick up. That's what we're going to pick up, Craig, right after this, our final break of the hour. We've got Dr. Roberts for one more riveting segment, and I know that you're just as enthralled with this conversation as I am. We'll conclude it next.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Welcome back, everybody. One more segment with the great Craig Roberts, paulcraigroberts.org. And we would ask you to go there and read and inform yourself. Please inform yourself. I'm looking in our broadcast archives right now. Hard to believe the last time Craig was on the program was all the way back in 2018. So it's been 5 years. I am making a vow right now that we won't go another 5 years. I hope to do this again soon, and it is much needed, and we appreciate, again, the time tonight. We have one segment remaining, and I'd like to ask you three separate questions. So we might have to move a little bit more quickly, but I think we can do it. First of all, again, you have background in government, with the presidential administrations, in the media, at the top of the tip of the spear, Wall Street Journal, you know, high-level faculty at prestigious universities. So you have an informed opinion on a lot of these, really all of these things. But with regards to the media coverage of this in the United States, I'd like to divert just quickly to talk about that. for as much as those who are the powers that be in the United States saying that they love diversity and diversity is our greatest strength, they certainly don't value the diversity of opinion. There is no diversity of opinion on this. You would think that something this big and this important, there would be other voices, but it is as though all media speaks through the same mouthpiece.
They make it sound like we're winning. And I don't think that's really the case.
Your take on that? No diversity of opinion on with regards to this global issue.
Well, there's no diversity of opinion on anything. I mean, look at COVID or
right.
the vaccine or you know, there's only narratives. There are official narratives, and if you don't agree with the official narrative, you're censored or you're just closed out. So the official narratives serve agendas, and the agenda being served is American hegemony. It's an agenda that requires us to always be the right, on the right guy, doing the right thing, winning. And so the result is that's what you hear. You have to understand, and another thing, back during the original Cold War in the 20th century, in which I was very much involved, there was a lot of dissenting opinion. There were two sides to this. Well, today, there's only one side. There's no dissenting opinion. Why? Because all of the professors and the think tanks and the foreign policy so-called experts, they're all on military security complex grants. That's what funds the think tanks. That's what funds the professors' research. That's what funds the foreign policy institutes. So they're purchased. They're bought. If they go against the official narrative, the career's over. So that's why you
get what you pay for.
Sorry?
Said you get what you pay for, and they're paying for it, so they're getting
You got it.
That explains it. I mean, you nailed it. You know, we had Congressman Steve King on the other couple of weeks ago to talk about how Congress works. You're nailing how this whole thing works right now.
Right. Well, that's how it works. The Congress is not independent. It's dependent on campaign contributions. Who makes the campaign contributions? The military security complex, Big Pharma. Big oil, agribusiness, and so all those agendas are protected with official narratives. And who's going to go against the narrative? Once you go against the narrative, look what they're doing to the doctors, the independent doctors who weren't on Big Pharma grants, who said, watch out, that vaccine's dangerous, it's deadly. What are they doing to them? They've started off censoring them. Now they're pulling their medical licenses. They're driving them out of the practice of medicine.
We're with you on that too, all the way.
Yeah. So you see, the notion that you have any kind of information other than controlled information, it's not so. At least not in the print
not here.
TV media.
Yeah, I don't know where, but certainly not in America. Let me ask you this, Craig. All right, it's a two-part question. I'll ask you the first, and I know that you're not necessarily any more of an oracle than anyone is, but if you had to gaze into your crystal ball, what are the prospects now that they're sending these Abrams tanks in? And I don't see how America isn't a participant in this war. I mean, technically, just because we're funding and arming Ukraine, but not actually boots in Russian territory, we're not, or Ukrainian territory, we're not participants. I don't buy that. This is the way America always does it. But now that they're sending in these tanks, and now that, you know, Putin is calling up the forces that you mentioned, two-part question. What do you think the possibilities of a global nuclear war may be? I mean, it sounds so far-fetched in science fiction, but what do you think that those possibilities may be? And what would be a legitimate resolution to this conflict that adults would come to if we had adults in charge of the decision-making process?
On our side.
Well, you know, the atomic scientists just moved up their doomsday clock to 90 seconds before midnight. Yeah.
Better than 1 second.
Pretty close.
Yeah,
90
it's
seconds.
As close as it's ever been.
90
yeah.
seconds before nuclear Armageddon. Now, I explained to you why that's happening. It's because Putin has he's been too much of a avoid conflict thing, limit the activity in Ukraine and so forth. But now he's being forced to actually realize he's out of war and he's got to get it over with. Well, I think the war will be over fairly quickly. The tanks that are being sent will have zero impact. The only way the tanks would be effective if we were sending thousands of tanks. You know, what are we sending, 30 or 40?
31, I mean, that's not 30, even, 31, yeah.
Well, see, what is that? That's nothing. That's not even a tank company. You'd have to have 10, 20 tank divisions. You'd need thousands of these tanks before it'd have any impact on the Russians.
You say
so the tanks are useless, and they're not going to get there. By the time they get there, the war will be over.
I want to say this publicly and on the AM radio airwaves tonight. I hope you're right, because I see this from I'll be frank, I see it from the Russian perspective. I am not a NATOist and a Washingtonian. I agree with George Washington's foreign policy, but not much that's come out of Washington since the days of Washington. What would be a legitimate resolution, Craig? Something that would be legitimate, something that would be sensible.
Both sides could live with.
That's right. What would that be if we had people earnestly looking for that?
There's not one, because Washington's agenda is to humiliate Russia, not to reach a solution. And the Russians are gradually learning that they've got to end this thing with force, which they haven't really used very much. And so I suspect that the question is, what does the United States do when it's humiliated and the Ukrainians are destroyed, despite all the Washington talk and the boasting and we're winning and all the weapons we've sent and the $100 billion or more? What happens when all of this is exposed as just utter, total, stupid lies? And the Russians are sitting there and the whole thing's over with. What do we do then? We're humiliated. We're embarrassed. The great superpowers had his butt kicked. All its lies are apparent. That's the question. What happens then? Then that's when the Americans, oh, we can't stand this. We got to somehow save our reputation.
Nuke the red button.
That's exactly what'll happen. I spent 25 years in Washington. There's not an ounce of sense in the place. There never has been.
All right, so you're
and
not
that's
looking
exactly
to...
what happens. Russia is not going to tolerate this much longer. They have the force to end this war in 3 or 4 days. And when that happens, which I suspect is going to have to happen, because otherwise the Russians are going to sit there taking more and more provocations. Well, the nationalists inside Russia are getting tired of it. And they're saying, look, Putin, don't you know you're at war? Can't you fight a war if you can't get out of the way?
Huh. What
about
China,
Paul? That's the attitude that's growing in Russia.
Do you think that China will move on Taiwan?
If they want to, they don't need to. They're going to get Taiwan just through economic cooperation. There's nothing we can do about China or Russia. They're outside any control of us. They're just too powerful. They got too many weapons. They got too many people, too many resources. Look, the United States is a completely busted. Look at our military.
Amen.
We got a woke
Amen.
Military. Do you think the Chinese and the Russians have got generals wearing dresses and high heels?
You think
the Russian troops have got feminists, homosexuals, transgender officers? Of course they don't.
I tell you what, if it's ever a boots on the ground war, we get waxed with that kind of action, which, listen, I love my people. I love my I don't know about the government right now, but the people I love, and I want our people to prosper. But, you know, I mean, America has just become a woke dystopian nightmare. Craig, we're coming up on the end of the hour. My friend, we could have gone the full 3 hours with you. It would have been enough. I took the first segment before you came on tonight. Pat Buchanan retired his pen, and I worked for Pat in 2000, so I was giving a little homage, and then I would say, well, there's another great guy out there who hasn't retired his pen. It's Paul Craig Roberts. He's coming up next. We really should have gone the whole hour with you. I want to give a quick shout out to you from another mutual friend of ours, I believe, certainly a friend of mine, Peter Brimelow, who said that you and he go back to 1971. You helped him get a job with Senator Hatch, and he's tuned in and sends you nothing but the best. Any friend of Peter's a friend of ours. We are flat out of time. But listen, Craig, I want our people to support you. I want them to go to paulcraigroberts.org.
If you want to know about this Ukrainian conflict, he is a go-to source.
Oh, he's got stuff every week. News. Go back to last year, but every week there's something there, and I read it all. Craig, thank you for making time for us tonight. I hope we can talk again soon.
Okay, James, thank you for being interested. Appreciate talking with you.
We're very interested, and I'll email you again after the broadcast concludes tonight. Thank you so much, the great and good Paul Craig Roberts. Why don't we have people like that in governmental administrations anymore? Well, I tell you what, we can win with guys like Craig Roberts. We can win with guys like Craig. We'll be back with the second hour next. Stay tuned, everybody.